2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of the 90th Percentile. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me, as always, is my co-host, Matt Pajak of Loden Sports, of Slammers Baseball. Just he's Matt Pajak. What's going on, man? How are you?
Hi, Jeff. You got that new mic and you sound great.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. You know, I'm trying right now. I'm trying to sound
great.
Great.
Yeah. In pursuit of greatness. It's September. It's that time of year, Jeff. The leaves are changing. The air is crisp in the mornings.
Yeah, I can feel it.
Yeah, you can feel the playoff baseball coming. In your case, the Arizona Fall League. College guys are back on campus. It's a good time of year.
Yeah, it is a good time of year. You know, frankly.
You like football? There's a lot of football on TV.
Yeah, football's back. You know, minor league baseball is kind of winding to a close. But the last couple weeks of the season are fun. A lot of guys get promoted to Double A that are interesting prospects. So it's kind of been a hotbed up here. I've had a good year Triple A wise with Worcester. That's an interesting team. So I still got a few more weeks of that. You get to the parks, they're a little bit more empty during the weekdays. You know, people got other stuff going on. It's not sunny in summertime vacation any longer. So yeah, I kind of appreciate it. You know, it's a kind of empty park. So I get to do my thing and work, and it's a lot less of a hassle as I'm squatting in seats behind the home plate. You know,
the way you just described that feels like a movie transition. You know, you're watching a movie and the seasons change, and then you see all like the school buses start rolling up. You got the leaves changing. You can hear the wind in the air. It's like, yeah, September. Jeff, we got an interesting topic here. Actually, before we get into that, I found some really good barbecue in Denver, and I do want to shout that out.
Did see a plate of that. I saw you post that, and then a Italian sandwich that looked pretty good, but really thick on the cuts.
Not a traditional Italian. That's okay. But yeah, the cuts were really good, and the mozzarella was good, and it was pesto, and it was on ciabatta, and it was a delicious sandwich. So not your typical like Northeast Italian sandwich by any means, but Gates Deli and Grog on Pearl Street in Denver. Just a really tasty sandwich. They had a whole bunch of other sandwiches on the menu too. I'm going to have to go back and try them, but yeah, that was a 70 over by University of Denver. But yeah, downtown by the ballpark, I mean, if walkable to Coors Field, that's actually what we did, was we went and got this barbecue spot and then we walked over to Coors Field. The name is Pit Fiend. The guy who smokes meats there, Pitmaster, if you will, was previously at a different spot that has since closed. And that spot was recommended to me by a fellow by the name of Jeff Latchman. Worked for the White Sox and their baseball operation. He recommended it when I was moving out to Denver. And my wife has been very, being from North Carolina, very hesitant on barbecue. I was almost like apprehensive, like,
yeah,
barbecue can't be that good out here in Denver. So it's been over a year and a half we've been here. And we finally decided I led the charge. We're going to go to Pit Fiend, and it did not disappoint. I had like a really good, like pulled lamb. Some of it, I mean, it was more on the traditional end, like the brisket and pulled pork, but like the flavors were just so good. And the pulled lamb was, I mean, you drive out of your way for that pulled lamb. And then it had this, this smoked pork belly that just like melted like butter in your mouth. I mean, it was just, and all the sauces were really good, even though you didn't really, I mean, it's Jeff, it's the age old, you know, internal debate when you're dealing with good barbecue is like, the meat doesn't need sauce. Right. But then you're like tasting these sauces and you're like, these sauces are really good. So then you're like, okay, well, what's my proportion of sauce to bite? And do I use sauce with every bite? Do I not use sauce?
I feel like the approach is you need to go in. you need to taste the meat virgin style, you know, no sauce on it.
Yep.
Just nice and clean. You tasted it. You get a two or three bites, you know, maybe two thirds of the way or a third of the way through. Then that final two thirds, the next third, you bring in the sauce. Right. And then you maybe mix it up. Right.
It's I think pretty you much what do both. I did. That's I you pretty do much both. What I did.
If it's good sauces, you got to do both, you know. Then you're looking for fries. You're looking for anything you can dip into the sauces, right?
That's it. And it was one of those places where when they sell out of things, they sell out of things. So, like, they were sold out of ribs. I mean, we went later in the day. They were sold out of ribs. They were sold out of the mac and cheese, which I heard is really good. They were sold out of the potato salads. A lot of the sides were gone at that point. So, we ended up with, like, a little thing coleslaw. And then we got the last cornbread muffin with hot honey. And Jeff, that was out of this world as well. So anyway, Pit Fiend, downtown Denver, walkable to the ballpark, probably about 3/4 mile from Coors Field. 70 grade barbecue. 70 grade barbecue. So, yeah. Anyway, Jeff, we were talking yesterday about it. I don't want to call it deception because it's not really deception, but like, I think it's safe to say that you and I are both involved to a certain extent in like the Twitter sphere, the baseball Twitter sphere. And there's a lot of people that are like not directly involved. Like they're not working for clubs or whatever that, you know, kind of weigh in on players that they see, whether it's draft prospects or pro prospects or whatever it is. Right. Mm-hmm. And every year this happens, especially like right before the high school season. And you said something yesterday where you kind of the first time you remembered it was like 2020. And it was really like when the high school seasons got canceled, a lot of guys were popping up on Twitter with their bullpens and they were all throwing really hard. And just kind of had this discussion about like what like velocity, like what's real. And I don't want to say like what's deception or like what's not real, but like
what's marketing?
What can you really expect out of a guy who's popping 99 or 100 in February on Twitter? Because there are guys in the big leagues and there are guys in college baseball that throw really hard and they hold it for a lot of innings. And then there's other guys who are also popping 99 on Twitter who don't necessarily hold that. And there's a difference. But specifically going back to like 2020 and what was popping up on Twitter is like, well, what I was saying was like, these guys are dialed into, they're not competing because there's no season. They're dialed into a very specific routine. And it's like, okay, well, here's my high intent bullpen and I'm going to, you know, let it eat. And they're sleeping well. They're not traveling. They're eating well. They're adding strength. They're working out. This is kind of like them at their peak. And you're seeing them on Twitter popping like 98, 99. And you're getting really excited about that, you know, as, you know, somebody who enjoys following prospects on Twitter. Right. I'm not like almost this podcast is like less for like people who work in the game and more so for people who follow the game, if that makes sense. Because sure. It's a little bit of like, okay, let's use Cole Phillips as an example, even though he hasn't really pitched much in pro ball. Like,
he hasn't pitched at all.
Yeah, he hasn't pitched at all, but
still like, hasn't debuted.
His high school spring, like he was popping 99 down in Texas. And like, I think you have a note here. Sat mid 90s. Where did he sit mid 90s in high school?
Yes, all these guys, it's what their pre-draft reports said they were sitting in their draft springs.
I think that's probably more realistic for Cole Phillips than to try and hold 99. Now maybe he's a bad example. Let's go to a guy who's not on the shelf right now. Alex Clemmy. I've got this this tweet from February 27th 2023. February 27th, Penn, fastball 96-98, top 99 with the TrackMan data. So here's Clemmy just letting it eat right before his senior spring in a bullpen. And what is Clemmy currently sitting? Jeff went in and he pulled all these velocities. What is Clemmie currently sitting in his 2024 season in minor league baseball?
It's like a Theo Vaughn. You're like, can you pull up that data for me?
What's, yeah, can you pull that up?
You know, what's he sitting right now?
Yeah, that was pretty good. That was almost as good as Rob Ninkovich's Mac Jones.
Oh, man. Did you share that with me?
Yeah, that was so good.
Yeah, that's funny. One of my assistant coaches is actually very friendly with Rob Ninkovich. Like, they go to Celtics games and stuff together. So that was a funny one, because I was kind of like, I had heard some stories about Mac Jones from that area.
Clunky so, Mac.
To see that come full circle publicly, I was like, well, I guess he really doesn't like Mac Jones. 94.8 miles an hour this year. We'll say like his 90th percentile velocity. So it's just kind of like the top end of where they sit, right? Is 96.2. He's touched 98 this year. That's his max velocity. And that's 848 fastball sample in the sample that I have. So like,
how many innings has he thrown this year?
Oh, let me see how many innings he's thrown this year. Yeah.
Pull the innings for me there.
Pull the innings for me, please. Oh man. I was so thrown that I ended up searching Cole Phillips instead of Alex Clemmie. So there you go.
This guy doing
He obviously was traded this year. Hey, he was born in the same town I was, actually. Didn't realize that.
Yeah, he went to what? Bishop Hendrickson in Rhode Island?
Yes, in Warwick, Rhode Island, which is like close to around where I grew up. I grew up on the Rhode Island border. But yeah, he was born in Fall River, Mass. I was also born in Fall River, Mass. So there you go. Baseball world's been impacted. I think as well as the GM of the Dodgers is from Fall River as well. So there you go. I have 92.1 innings this year.
All right. So 92.1 innings, which is a whole heck of a lot more innings than he'd be throwing in a high school season, which is a whole heck of a lot more innings than he would have thrown in his showcase summer, the previous summer. Jeff, I think this is the thing with high school arms specifically, and then in to a lesser extent, but in the same vein, you're going to start seeing the numbers pop from college appearances, right? So you're going to start to see like so-and-so college pitcher, you know, hitting 98 in the fall at insert school, right? Like those reports are going to start coming out. It's a lot different in a one inning look or a two inning look than it is, you know, to hold it. And to Clemmie's credit, like holding, what'd you say, almost 95?
Yeah.
I mean, that's almost 100 innings. Like that's pretty darn good. That's plus fastball velocity. That's actual plus fastball velocity as a starting pitcher in professional baseball versus like, you know, you see that bullpen before a season and like he's at his very best. You're seeing him at his very best in a high intent bullpen and he's up to 99. Like Clemmie is not going to be at his very best traveling all summer, pitching every fifth day, living the minor league lifestyle. Just because, like, as the season grinds on and it's hot and it's, you know, bus rides, whatever else, like, it's very rare that a guy, even at the big league level, is at their best every fifth day out, just in terms of like sleep quality and, you know, what they ate and just whatever it is. There's so many different variables. That's why, Jeff, like, sometimes you'll see a big league pitcher come out and like his velocity will be up a couple ticks. You know?
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, you got him on his best day. Like the stars kind of aligned. Like maybe he had a great night of sleep and like you didn't travel much last week and like a whole bunch of different things kind of mixed together. And it's like, boom, there he is at his best. And it's like, you can't expect that every time out. So I think a lot of what you see, you know, you called it marketing before. And I think there is that to an extent, but like with these guys on Twitter, And it's not just like, oh, here's my bullpen. Like, okay, yeah, that's sure, a no-brainer. But like, again, the fall college velocity reports and then also like showcase summer, high school guys, like most of these guys are geared up. If they're pitching for their travel ball team and you're a pitcher, you're throwing two or three innings.
Yeah.
You know, if you're on the showcase circuit and it's, you know, Team USA 18 U training camp, like you're throwing like at most two innings in a start. If it's area code games, it's like one or two innings. If it's East Coast Pro, it's one or two innings. Like you're not really getting a full taste of like, well, what's this going to look like after 70 pitches? You just don't see that a whole lot, you know, and you really don't see that until the spring. If you go out there in the spring and you see the guy.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just think again, for this is for the people that follow prospects on Twitter and follow prospects on Instagram or social media or whatever. If you follow prospects, just kind of like understand that there's a difference between like, oh yeah, this guy did touch 98. This guy did touch 99. And then like ultimately what they're going to try and attempt to hold. Now, the guys that can hold close to what they're touching on Twitter in these videos versus the guys who don't, you know, ultimately that determines, I think, you know, whether they start, whether they relieve. And it's not the same for all guys and all body types. I think some of that comes down to like, is there any projection left on the frame? Like, is this guy going to fill out more? Is he going to be able to hold that velocity? Or is this guy physically maxed? And we're living in a time, Jeff, where there's more and more physically maxed, not just pitchers, but like players in general in high school.
Yeah.
Because recruiting kind of demands it. There isn't really like a whole lot of excitement for a guy who's 170 pounds who still has to add 25 pounds because he's probably the guy that, you know, needs a little bit more development before he's ready to help you compete at a higher level. I don't know. I think it's an interesting conversation, but it happens every year. People get excited over guys that are, you know, popping 98, popping 99.
And I think, you know, some of it is, you know, the hope springs eternal, especially with prospects and like the newer crop coming up. I think everybody sort of loves the idea of the magic pill of the off season of players going to the off season, their training, you know. Like you said, there's a bunch of different factors, diet, sleep, whatever, but that like somehow they're going to unlock another gear. And we've seen it before. Guys definitely do that, but it's not like unilateral across the board. Right. And I think, you know, I look back to that 2020 draft in particular, because there was less of the show me element of it, of guys looking good in bullpens, the offseason numbers, and then not really having a high school season most places with enough games to actually compete and see if it's worth it. Plus some guys who got shut down at the beginning of their high school seasons and then trained and then were doing bullpens and we're seeing TrackMan screenshots. And I think it introduced a lot of that sort of marketing of prospects into the Twitter sphere. It wasn't as common previously. I think people became much more familiar with data and information at that point. Because you kind of needed to in order to be able to interpret a lot of the draft information. So that became, you know, a big part of it. I obviously was in charge of doing our draft content at that point when I was with Prospects Live and was running that site and, you know, worked with a bunch of guys now that are doing big rankings, whether it's Joe Doyle or, you know, Tyler, others. And then a lot of folks that, you know, have gone on to agencies. And I think we've seen agencies really utilize some of those tactics to promote a lot of these players, especially in the high school end, where it's like, you know, everybody loves the idea of, you know, he was the second high school pitcher taken in 2021, but the Frank Mazzucato, this guy, like, you know, isn't really much of anything on the showcase circuit or whatever, you know, the numbers aren't crazy, and then comes out and, you know, pumps in high school, shows a little bit more velocity than what he had showed, you know, previously, in, you know, the travel ball circuit. So I think that's interesting. I think that kind of like spurs people on to kind of like check into it, see what the actual, like, you know, bullpen numbers are, et cetera, where that probably wasn't even as big of a component. It was something that was reported like, oh, it was up to 99 in the bullpen, but when you couldn't see it and you couldn't see the, you know, the visual of the gun behind there, the board behind there flashing 98, 99 or whatever it is. I think that gives a lot of hope. And it also gives sort of a false sense of what these guys actually sit. So something that I did prior to the show is I went back and I looked at because I feel like there's enough time passed with 2020 high school draftees for sure. Some of those guys are in the major leagues. 2021 high school draftees, and then 2022 high school draftees, where there's at least a couple of seasons of professional baseball, full seasons that we can sort of draw from and then see where they're at right now. One of the big trends is I think a lot of what these guys were reported to sit in high school is still what they're sitting a couple years later, which I think means like, oh, that was accurate reporting. But was it, Matt? I think sometimes those numbers could be glorified a little bit. They could be, you know, massaged a little bit. And then you get onto the TrackMan and it's different. And then this is 2 years down the road. So, you know, these are pitchers that would be, you know, going into their draft years. Most of the time, some of them might have been draft eligible sophomores, but going into their draft summers this year for 2025, at least with the 22s, other ones would have already graduated would have already matriculated from college baseball to the professional ranks as draft picks and college picks if they were 2020 guys or 2021 at this point. So I think it's sort of interesting to look at this and see that, you know, of these 25 high school pitchers that were drafted in the top two rounds from 2020 to 2022, there's only been five significant velocity gainers. Oh, and they happen to be some of the biggest prospects that are listed here. Jared Jones is one, was more 92 to 94. He had been into upper 90s, like mid to upper 90s, like 96, 97 was what he was reported to top out at. He's been sitting 97.2 in the big leagues. Jackson Jobe had flash velocity, but was more like 92 to 94 when he was drafted. He sat 96.6 going into last night's start. So he was a big gainer. Andrew Painter, 93 to 95. He sat prior to getting injured and prior to having Tommy John surgery, 95 to 97 miles an hour. And then the other big gainer was Noah Schultz, who was 89 to 92 and is now sitting 95.3. But, you know, the prospects that we just named are the three highest rated pitching prospects in our current top 100 in Jobe, Schultz, Painter. Big leaguer in Jared Jones, who would have been a NL site, you know, excuse me, NL Rookie of the Year candidate had it not been for Paul Skeens coming up.
And what I will say on Jared Jones is in high school, I did see him sit 99 for three innings.
Oh, so there you go.
Right. So like he might have been down that day, but like, hey, it wasn't just like, hey, here's 99 in the first inning. And then second inning, it started.
There was velocity.
To taper off. Yeah. yeah. He always threw really, really hard all the time. Yeah. Jeff, I don't know. First time I kind of got by this was Bryce Jarvis. I was a big fan of Bryce Jarvis at Duke.
Yep.
And I remember, and he carved up West Virginia at West Virginia. I think it was either in a regional or a super regional. And he was 90-92. And it was like fastball. He had that signature, you know, plus change. Some people had double plus on it. And then he had the slider. And he just went out there and he competed. Like he was hitting his spots, working the bottom of the zone. And he was just really, really good. And that summer, there's a famous Division I baseball article that covered what he did that summer. Instead of going back to the Cape, he didn't get invited to USA Baseball 18 or a college national team. Instead of going back to the Cape for a second summer, he went and spent half his summer at Cressy and half his summer at Driveline. And I saw him in the fall, and he was 95, 97. The 80, 82 slider was now like 85, 87. The changeup was now two ticks up. He had this curveball that was like 82, 84. I remember it like it was yesterday. And I was like, this is disgusting. With this pitchability and that stuff, like, how is this not the top pitcher in the class? And then he went out beginning of the 2020 season before everything shut down. I think he threw a perfect game against an Ivy League school. And then he had Florida State the next week. And I was there for that Florida State start. and I think he was perfect through seven. So he might have thrown like 16 consecutive perfect innings. Something stupid like that. And then the season shut down, and then, you know, that year in that draft, he was a first rounder. But I was like, ah, well, if he's 95, 97, well, this is a completely different guy, right? Because, like, I'm used to seeing this guy pitch at 91, 93. Well, the reality was is that he wasn't 95, 97, and he was pitching more at, like, 94, 95 for those first couple starts of that 2020 season. And in all reality, like, he wasn't ever going to be able to hold 95, 97. So now he's a big leaguer, and he is averaging 96 on his fastball as a reliever, and he mostly pitches at 1 to 2 inning stints, which tracks with what I saw at Duke that fall ahead of his draft. But I do think that, like, that guy, 95, 97 in a 1 inning stint in the fall, probably averages out to more like 93, 94 as a starter. And that's the whole thing with, like, it's like a couple ticks up. Jeff, you can't go out there as a starting pitcher in high-level competitive professional baseball and throw max effort every pitch and do that for over 100 innings, 150 innings, whatever it is that it takes to start in the big leagues. You can't do that. You just don't see it.
Yeah.
You know, you look at Garrett Crochet. Garrett Crochet is a great example. Like, he was 100 to 102 as a reliever, you know? And it's like, as a starter, he's like 97, 98, 96, 98, you know, for the most part. It's like, well, he's going out there and he's not max effort every pitch, but he's 96, 98 at, you know, you could call it 90% effort, 80% effort, whatever it is that he's going out there and he's throwing. So I think that's just like a little bit of, you know, what we're talking about here is like in these short stints, you're going to see everything like way juiced up because these guys know. And you see it a lot on the showcase circuit, Jeff. And you know, that's why it's, you know, you go watch like the PGA All-American game or some of these All-American games that are broadcast on, you know, MLB Network. There was the other one that was kind of like run in conjunction with Area Code by MLB, high school all-star game, whatever it was. And these guys come out and they got the radar guns up and, you know, some of these guys are bumping like 98, 99, 100. And you go look at like a different look from the same summer, and it's like when they had to go for like two or three innings, like like 93 to 95, and like there were a couple 91s mixed in, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, like, you know, just going through the list here, and actually, you know what? We'll do that in a second. We're going to take a quick break.
Break us off.
Little break. We'll be right back.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. We mean it. We have a college baseball writer opening at Baseball America right now. And where are we posting it? Indeed. Because Indeed makes hiring easy and it gives us great candidates. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses, including Baseball America, worldwide, that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to improve any dog's health: their food. What she's discovered is that the way that many dog foods are made can actually create toxins that can be wrecking your dog's health. And this is true for even many premium brands. Fortunately, she's found that just by adding a few special superfoods to her dog's food, she saw huge transformations in their health. She's made a 20-minute video explaining step-by-step how anyone could do the same thing to see incredible changes to their dog's health. I've got two dogs, and I want them to be with me for a very long time. There's a lot of good stuff here that made me think about how most dog foods are made, what to avoid for my dogs, and superfoods that are great for them. If you want to keep your dog healthy and happy, go to badlandsfood.com/baseball and watch Catherine's video right now. Again, that's BADLANDSFOOD.com/baseball. I don't know about you, but I love fall. Fall is a time where the weather just feels perfect from the start of the day to the end. It's a great time for me to get on a bike, take a good long ride where it's nice and crisp, not cold, but crisp. And it's time for new fall traditions, like getting regular hydration and energy from Liquid IV. Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier Plus Energy delivers 100 milligrams of natural caffeine plus 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, so you can accomplish all the things you want and need to do. And they've combined their popular peach flavor with the highly requested blackberry to awaken your senses and keep you coming back for more. Liquid IV makes my workouts more enjoyable. It's really easy to prep. I just take my water bottle, fill it with water, some ice, pour in the Liquid IV, stir it up. It's ready to go. It gives me better hydration than I would if I was just using water. It's something that just makes those bike rides even more enjoyable than they were before. Hydration Multiplier Plus Energy delivers energy comparable to 1 to 2 cups of coffee through about 100 milligrams of naturally occurring caffeine. Experience the deliciousness of one of our best-selling flavors, peach, perfectly paired with the highly requested blackberry. It's an all-in-one formula that provides mind and body energy plus hydration that leaves you feeling focused, alert, and ready to take on anything. Tear, pour, live more. One stick and 16 ounces of water hydrates better than water alone. Powered by Live Hydroscience, an optimized ratio of electrolytes, essential vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients that turn ordinary water into extraordinary hydration. 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink. 8 essential vitamins and nutrients. Always non-GMO, vegan, gluten-free, dairy-free, and soy-free. Start a new fall tradition with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code BA2022 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code BA2022 at liquidiv.com.
All right, we're back. We're talking high school velocity gains, sort of real, or are they a mirage, Matt? But going through this 25, you had Mick Abel sat 93 to 95 this year, sitting 94.7. Nick Bitsko, which I think is one of the greatest examples of the sort of marketing that happened in 2020. And, you know, not a lot of experience reclassed, if I remember correctly. We were getting a ton of bullpen shots. We were getting a ton of information about how special this guy's slider was, and there's projectable velocity and, you know, sat 92 to 96. I think he touched 97, 98. This year, you know, he's barely pitched, right? Just since that point, he's barely pitched. 41 four seamers, Matt, sat 92.6 miles an hour.
No, geez.
You know, has dealt with a ton of injuries. Next guy that was on that list, another one that was sort of one of these poppers during that spring leading up to the draft. Justin Lang, 94 to 95 miles an hour. Missed 2024 with a shoulder injury. Actually, I saw him last year early in the season in the Florida State League. It was actually kind of electric. Bad lineup he faced, though, so we kind of beat him up, kind of bullied him. Sat 94.7. So, you know, 94 to 95, 94.7, you're kind of right there, right? It hasn't changed at all. And that was, you know, 3 seasons or 3 years after the draft. Dax Fulton, another guy here that Tommy John surgery. It's the second Tommy John surgery. Had one in high school. He was 90 to 93 miles an hour, sat 93.7 last year, but blew out again. Another one that was hyped up a lot. I remember seeing a lot of videos of this guy, Ben Hernandez. 90 to 95 in high school, sits 92.2 in 2024. We talked about Jared Jones. It's funny that Fulton, Hernandez, Bitsko, and Lang all went before Jones. Abel was super hyped and, you know, whatever, was a good high school pitching prospect, so I won't argue that one. Next one, this guy had, you know, some exposure funnel juice, Jared Kelly. Remember seeing Jared Kelly everywhere. I think he was on every single one of these teams. Couldn't really spin a breaking ball. He sits 93.3 miles an hour now, was reported at 93 to 96 in high school. And I can remember him sitting a little bit more right out
of the He was grabbing 99s and 100s at the
Exactly. Exactly. I just went with what the SAT was because I figured that was what they were showing more. We talked about Jackson Jobe and next year's the following year's draft in 2021. Frank Mazzucato sat upper 80s, sits 88 to 90 now. So really not a big change, right? Not a huge change. Andrew Painter, we talked about. Chase Petty's a fun one. Petty was a guy we saw a ton of bullpens. New Jersey season was canceled a little bit earlier. Sat upper 90s. I think we saw some 101s in bullpen. He was
grabbing hundreds on the showcase circuit.
Hundreds consistently. We saw that in some of the prep events. Sits 95 to 97 now. So, like, you know, it's like 96.1 is what he's sitting. So, kind of close. When I think upper 90s, I'm thinking 97, 98 is what you're sitting, right? Not like I kind of think 94 to 96 is mid 90s.
Yeah, I think we juxtapose all this with, like, there's Paul Skeens who throws 100.
Yep.
And all these other guys.
Harlan Susana sits 99.9 this year.
Right. So you got like Harlan Susana and Paul Skeens who throw 100, 101, whatever. Right. And then you've got all of these other guys who are on record as having touched 100.
Yep.
And Skeens and Susana go out there and they hold 100 every time they throw a fastball. And that's different than these other guys who are touching hundreds on your social media. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Jeff, we live in an age, and I think part of this is there used to be, especially with high school arms, and correct me if I'm wrong, if you know any differently, but there used to be like a, oh, this guy's a high school arm, so he's got some projection left, you know? So you see a guy 90, 92 in high school, and you'd be like, oh, there's more coming. You get excited about that, right? Now it's like that same projection isn't there with high school pitchers because we live in a time when players are so optimized at such an early age.
Yeah.
Like these guys have access to all the resources of, you know, arm velocity training, yeah, anywhere they are. They can all do tread tracking, remote online, drive line, whatever it is. And they're all like, I don't want to say physically maxed, but they're pretty much physically maxed as 18-year-olds if they're prepping to go into professional baseball. Right. So like for a lot of these guys that are getting drafted out of high school, like there isn't, and you know, you pulled the numbers, like there really isn't like much room to continue to go up because like you're already there. You're optimized at 18 years old. I saw a
maybe
guy,
it's a projection is a bit of a myth, I think, is what's kind of been kicking around my head when looking at this. I mean, it's not that it's say that it doesn't exist, but it's not universal. And I feel like we've been sold that it's universal. All these guys will add velocity. When I studied college starters, it was more common for college starters to add a mile per two or of velocity from what they sat in college to what they sat as a professional 2 years later. And it was almost universal. There were very few guys that lost velocity. If they did, they were typically guys who have dealt with a significant amount of injury, which I think is interesting. I don't know if there's anything material there in terms of why it's the college guys that seem to project better to add velocity. You know, I don't know. Is it?
I mean, if I'm gonna throw a theory at the wall here, Jeff, it's probably because a lot of the guys that go pitch on college campuses weren't like top draft prospects in high school, right?
Or so later developers.
If you're fixing to get a couple million dollars from a club in the draft out of high school, like you are going to go, you know, tread, driveline, strength program, you're going to go do all of those things and you're going to go for it to show your absolute best at that point. But if you're one of these guys that makes the jump out of high school, well, if they weren't, you know, blowing all their resources on, you know, arm velocity programs and strength and conditioning and all that, and they were just kind of going about their business in high school, and then they get to college and, like, you know, most colleges I think it's a mixed bag. I'm not as educated on this as some other people might be, but like some colleges have really good pitching development resources that we've talked about, in the past podcasts. And then there are a lot out there that don't necessarily.
Yeah.
And, we've talked about how prospects come from every school in the country. So there's a lot of pitching prospects that get drafted every year into pro ball out of programs that don't have the resources to give.
Yeah.
That same type of attention to their players. And I think that's probably what you're seeing is like, those are the guys making the jumps. Cause like, let's go the other way, Jeff. Like, we've talked about how, Wake Forest pitchers are optimized and how that's kind of like our feel is that like, okay, they've got access to the best resources in the world and they're pitching once a week. And like what was Rhett Lauder sitting at Wake Forest? And then what was he sitting this past week in his big league debut? Because without looking at the numbers, I'm pretty sure his average velocity in his big league debut was a couple ticks less than what his average velocity was in his last year at Wake Forest. I could be wrong.
You're asking me to pull that up? Can you pull up the 2023 up, pitch data from...
Jeff, can you pull that up?
You'll have to give me a second, but yeah, I can probably check that. I can probably check that. You're just gonna have to give me a second. So you have to fill in here a little bit for me.
Yeah, I'll fill in. Yeah. So I was watching this high school arm, Team USA guy, probably about 5'11", 200 pounds, bulldog righty. There's effort there. He gets way down the mound. He's got a really nice shape on his fastball. It's like a high carry fastball. The changeup's all right. The breaking ball isn't really a competitive pitch. It's like a low 70s, big loopy, like 12-6, see it coming kind of pitch, right? So I'm watching this guy throw, and he's grabbing 96. He's grabbing 96, grabbing 96, grabbing 96. The fastball, it's got that carry up in the zone. It's a swing and miss pitch. It's pretty good. And for the whole first inning that he threw, he was 95, 96. And then he comes out second inning and he was more like 91 to 95, and towards like the back end of that second inning it was like some more like 91-93, right? And I'm sitting here, I'm like, this is a high effort 5'11 200 pound bulldog guy, doesn't have any projection left, and he's he's showing me 96, and like that's what you're gonna see, if you go on Twitter or whatever, you're gonna see, oh, this guy's been up to 96. But sitting here, I'm like, this guy's not gonna start. This guy's not going to start. It's because if this guy's 91, 93 as a starter, 90, 93 as a starter, again, there's not much projection left. And you safely assume that if he's trying to stretch it out over 60, 70 pitches, 80 pitches, whatever it is, like he's going to be 91, 93. I mean, again, he might grab those five or sixes early, but that fastball with ride up in the zone at like 92, 93 was starting to get hit. The changeup isn't that much of a weapon where he's going to get a ton of swing and miss on it, and he doesn't have a breaking pitch, So,
anyway, I have velocity. I have velocity for Rhett Lauder. Sat 92.8 last year. Sat 93.8 in his pro debut. In his AAA debut, he was 94.8. Don't forget that's the TrackMan system as well. The sinker, which is about half of it, so if we blend it together, it might go down a little. Sinker sits 92.4, so that's more in line with the college velocity. Slider and changeup were pretty much dead on the money. So he's thrown his four-seamer a little bit harder than he did in college by about a mile.
So I was wrong on that. I'll take the L. Thanks, Jeff. That's why we fact-check the numbers.
Why we fact-check. Yeah, exactly. But I think, like I said, I think sometimes with some of the guys that go to college, it's guys that maybe don't show their best velocity as seniors in high school, right? They can pitch, they got enough velocity. I know we talk with our buddy Pierce down there in Texas, and like what he sees for high school players is very different from like what I would see in Massachusetts, probably what you see to an extent in Colorado. Because he sees guys that are sitting 88 to 89 every weekend, like every start just about. He's seeing pitchers that are sitting in the upper 80s, low 90s We don't see those guys, but there's a lot of them out there. Those guys do get to college campuses. Maybe sometimes they're just later developers. Cause like I look at some of the guys that have added velocity from these five high school guys. You got Jared Jones, who, you know, you talked about, but like is a pretty good athlete too, if I'm not mistaken. Can probably back me up on that one. Somebody that seems like, you know, has the ability to add more velocity. Jackson Jobe seems like he's probably a pretty good athlete for a pitcher.
You know, Jobe was a really good athlete. Jumpers. Yeah. Jobe was a good athlete. Painter was a good combination of size and athleticism. He was like an average athlete. He's like 6'7".
Yep.
Who's the other one?
Other one was Noah Schultz, another big guy.
I mean, Noah Schultz was playing catch at 89, 92 in high school. So I think that one, I don't know what he looks like right now, but.
But he's a big guy.
Right. Like he's big and like
6'9".
If you put a little bit more oomph behind it, I'm not saying max effort, but like if you're looking at, if you're telling me like how much effort is Noah Schultz when I saw him in high school, 89, 92, how much effort is he given? I'd say like 50%.
Yeah.
I mean, he was just kind of like, all right, let me pull this thing back and then just boom. And it was just like 90, but like you're not going to hit it because it's got disgusting movement.
The other one was Dax Fulton, but he also was coming off of Tommy John surgery, I think, as a senior in high school, and then had Tommy John surgery after last year. So he was a velocity gainer, but maybe we don't know what he necessarily would have sat at if he hadn't gotten injured. So I think that probably changes the equation a little bit. But yeah, it feels like maybe a lot of these guys are more physically maxed and sort of ready. And I think this is a good sample because this 2021, 22 classes all sort of came within that modern window of training and information and a really cottage industry around preparing young athletes, not just pitchers. It's across all different sports, you know, to become professionals. Like, I think you see that, especially if you live in an area where there's a little bit of money. And I think that we're of the mindset that a lot of pitchers in particular in the baseball space are really where the country club sort of mentality and money comes from. You know, most of these guys come from a pretty affluent background, so they have the ability to, you know, spend money and invest in training and doing all these sort of things that, you know, you're not going to necessarily get, you know, when people are from more middle class or low income kind of backgrounds. So I think that's a big part of it, is a lot of these guys are already physically maxed. Like I look at Anthony Salametto, who was like 90 to 94 and really physical as a high schooler. I saw him pitch in Fenway and he was sitting, you know, 91 to 93 pretty much. He's sitting 89.1 miles per hour. He's like the biggest dropper out of anybody. He's the only one where I would say there was like a substantial drop. But maxed out, really unusual operation as well. I think he's kind of a good example of like some of these guys that the investment was made and they were physical and big and kind of ready to throw. And it's like, well, maybe that kind of is what's seeping away the idea of projection here, is the fact that a lot of these guys are already on sort of pro kind of training plans when they're 17, 18 years old.
Yeah, and that I think is kind of like, if you talk to scouts, like the 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th rounder that nobody's ever heard of from under a rock somewhere, like that's where they're finding their guy with actual projection that they're excited about, that like is probably a long shot because
the Gary Gill Hill.
Right. Because he's under a rock and he's never really, you know, faced a high level of competition. Otherwise, he'd be privy to these resources, right? Like, but that's probably where you're gonna find that, oh, this guy's really interesting. He's 6'3", 185 pounds, he's got big feet, big hands, wide shoulders, like he's gonna add 25 pounds. Like he, you know, he just started throwing a breaking ball last year. He's low mileage.
Yeah.
I don't know. We got a kid at Slammers, Nate Walkner, and he's got D1 offers, high academic. He was like 86, 88 this summer. Jeff, this guy's like 6'4", 200 pounds, but like really good frame. He's athletic. He's still going to add weight. as he continues to get more physical. But he was 86, 88. I think he topped 89 this summer. And then recently he started like creeping into, I think he got like 91, 92 a couple weeks ago. And that's your projection, righty, because he's a low mileage arm. He doesn't have like a ton of innings, high school or travel ball over the past couple of years. And it works, you know?
Yeah.
But that guy doesn't have any pro interest right now. That guy doesn't have, you know, 30 Division I schools, you know, lining up for him. I mean, he's a 4.2 GPA, low mileage, 6'4", 200-pound righty who's just starting to touch 92 a couple of years ago. That's the guy everybody's excited about. Right now, it's like, where's the track record of performance? Where's the 95 if you're that big, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. It's interesting, but again, you know, a lot of this is stuff that people who, you know, get paid to cover the game know because they see it every day. But it's things that like a lot of people, you know, in the Twitter hype machine, you know, that again, they're paying attention. They're either fans of their team or it's Dynasty Fantasy Baseball or you know, whatever it is.
Sure.
Prospecting for their baseball card collection. You know, people want to know kind of like, hey, what's real and what's not. And it's not necessarily that it's not real. It's just kind of understanding that, you know, there are certain guys that are going to be, you know, there are very few guys, but there are certain guys that could be Paul Skeens and go sit 100 in the big leagues. And then most of these guys, like big league average fastball is 94 for a reason. That's the average fastball of all pitchers in the big leagues. So if you're throwing 94 and you're holding that in the big leagues, pretty damn good.
Yeah. And I think, you know, even a lot of the examples of the guys we've seen that added velocity were guys that went to college and were sort of in those programs, etc., before going pro, you know. And I just think it's interesting that we consistently have seen that, you know, gains while they're at college, gains once they come, you know, into the pro game. And it just seems like that's where some of the lowest hanging fruit is. I almost feel like, you know, it's another, not to say that it's for everybody, but particularly on the pitching side. And I think it's why we're seeing less and less prep pitchers drafted, you know, in the first few rounds, like what, 2023, it was 6. The year before that was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 in the top two rounds. Yeah. And then it was split like 7, 8. So it's gone down of late. You know, I think some of that is like down prep classes, but I think some of it is pitchers getting to campus. You know, I know he's not one of your favorites, but like William Schmidt, for example, gets to LSU, you know, was a guy that maybe years ago might've gotten paid. I think there's something to be said for these guys going to campus, sort of learning how to pitching in competitive environments, that sort of draws out the best and maybe eliminates some of these guys that were overhyped high school players as well. You know, I think that's one of the things that's great about baseball and just following prospects is, there's no jobs that get given. You know, you see NFL games, there's some rookies out there right now that may not be better than the guy that's their backup necessarily. But the money's there and they're getting snaps simply because the money was so big and, you know, they're expected to make an immediate impact where baseball, you got to earn it, man. You know?
Yeah. I mean, on that point, I mean, you think of like a Thatcher Hurd, who was a big time high school pitching prospect, and like, you know, he priced himself out of the draft. He goes to LSU and then 3 years later, the Yankees get him at a discount. You know? I'm not saying Cam Johnson's not going to turn it around at Oklahoma, but like there was a lot of money on the table out of high school that he turned down to go to LSU. And now he's at Oklahoma and like, he's really got to go. He's got ground to make up to get back to his high school number that he was turning down. And I think that just proves the point of, you know, why you're seeing fewer high school pitchers go. It's just a very inefficient buy for MLB clubs out of high school. Last point that I think is a good example, going back to what we were talking about before in regards to college pitchers making more velocity jumps than high school pitchers. Correct me if I'm wrong, Shane Bieber. I know we've talked about him in the past. but wasn't Bieber like 90, 92?
Yeah. In college? He was a guy that added velocity once he came up to pro ball. Tanner Bibee is another one that's, you know, seen a pretty big velocity spike that he's now held for a couple of years. I mean, he was popping hundreds in game.
Bieber was a weighted ball arm velocity program.
Yeah, I'd have to double. I'm pretty sure that he did some of that. You know, I don't know specifically about training methods there, so I don't want to speak out of turn.
Yeah. I mean, but I think the thought there is, okay, 90, 92 in college, and then, you know, he gets a couple extra ticks once he gets into pro ball, and now his stuff's playing up, and now he's Shane Bieber. You want to sign on, correct?
Yeah. I mean, I saw Paul Skeens sit 93 to 95. Right. And then 2 years later, he's sitting 98, 99, 100 miles an hour. Trying to think, there was another one that just popped into my mind of somebody that was sitting like 91 to 92 that had jumped. Bryce Miller, you know, had a jump. He had velocity, but now sits with way more velocity than what he had when he was in college. Logan Gilbert, more velocity. George Kirby, more velocity. You know, there's a lot of them.
Going back to Shane Bieber, let's hypothetically say Shane Bieber was a famous high school kid. If he was a famous high school kid and he was 90, 92 in today's day and age, he would have had the velocity gain intervention ahead of his high school draft instead of after a successful pitching career at UC Santa Barbara. And I think that's the point. Right.
Yeah.
Is that a lot of these high school arms, they're getting those pro resources ahead of their high school draft, at which point they can only do one of two things: go to college or pro ball and sustain, or go backwards. So I don't know. Jeff, it's
there you go. I think we should put a pin in it. There we go. Talking a little prep velocity and reports, gains, what happens in pro ball. Good conversation, Matt, as always. Thank you for tuning into the 90th percentile. I'm Jeff, he's Matt. We'll be back next week.